Blog Talk Radio.
Attention! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard! Keep your arms and legs on the inside at all times. Hold on tight! The show is about to begin!
Hey, welcome everyone! This is Ashley Ross with the Coaching Chicks, and I am so pleased to have our special guest, Shep Salzman, with us today. And Shep is very near and dear to our hearts because he keeps us all healthy. He is a functional medicine practitioner, a licensed acupuncturist, certified herbalist, a registered nurse, and certified homeopathic practitioner, if the other parts weren't enough. He has a private wellness clinic in Vienna, Virginia, which is called Vienna Complementary Medicine. And he's also a principal broker for Realty Investment Company, also located in Vienna, Virginia. So he understands challenging an active real estate broker and trying to stay healthy. So welcome, Shep, today, and let's bring him on board. Hey, Shep, how's it going?
Good.
Excellent. Well, I know today we're going to talk about the thyroid gland. So, you know, it's kind of one of those big mysterious, we hear thyroid this, thyroid that. What can you tell me about the thyroid gland?
Well, you do hear a lot about it because it's a common problem. And the symptoms are very common, and people are trying to figure out whether it's their thyroid or not, or, you know, to what extent. But the thyroid gland is in the throat, and it's one of the most important glands in the body, and it's part of the endocrine system. The endocrine system is the system of glands and hormones. And the thyroid gland makes quite a few hormones, but T4, or thyroxine, is the main hormone made by the thyroid, but not the only one. It's the one we're going to kind of focus on today because it's this hormone and what happens to it that has a great effect on your health.
Okay, so why is T4 the most important hormone we're going to talk about today?
Well, T4 is made by your thyroid gland, but it does have to be converted to a different form called T3. And every cell in your body needs T3 to produce energy. Cells can't function without T3. So if cells aren't getting T3, they don't function very well, and they function poorly, hypofunction, low function. And this can, and of course, the cells add up, they become tissues, and they wind up being organs, glands, and, you know, body parts. And so if you have a low-functioning part of your body, it could be due to lack of T4 and T3, which is rather common. And the reason why the symptoms are so diverse and widespread is, of course, you do need to have your thyroid or T3 in every cell. And a lot of people do not. They're low for all kinds of reasons. So they have a wide variety of symptoms as a result. But this conversion of T4 to T3 does have to take place.
Wow. Well, that does sound pretty critical. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Shep, can you hear me? Okay, beautiful.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. So what do we call that when it's low or when we have high? Because I know sometimes we can also have too much thyroid.
Right. Well, H-Y-P-O, is called hypothyroidism, is low functioning. Hyper, H-Y-P-E-R, is, you know, high functioning. Like hyperactive is high and hypoactive is low. Low is more common.
I think it's always kind of
hyperactive
confusing.
Is, you know, there's definitely people that have that as well.
Excellent. So how does our body convert T4 to T3?
Well, you know, the 4 and the 3 refer to the number of molecules of iodine in the thyroid hormone. So T4 is 4 molecules of iodine, T3 is 3 molecules of iodine. And why this matters is because until T4 becomes T3, it doesn't get in your cells. And this conversion mostly takes place in the liver and in the large intestine, which is why the health of your liver and your large intestine affects your thyroid function. People don't usually think of their liver as having anything to do with their thyroid, but actually it has a huge impact. Under conversion or poor conversion of T4 to T3 is one of the most common reasons why women have low thyroid function and thyroid symptoms. It's not talked about a lot, but it's actually very common. and poor liver health is going to come.
Wow. So what are the common symptoms so that we know what to look for a hypothyroid?
Well, here's the most common, but believe me, there's a lot more. Weight gain, also inability to lose weight. I mean, I can tell you a lot of people are on low-calorie diets and exercise a lot, and they can't lose weight. How could this be? Well, if your thyroid function's low, you can be starving and you won't lose weight. Feeling cold, cold hands, cold feet, getting cold easily. Also dryness, especially dry skin and dry hair. Hair falling out, feeling depressed, constipation, sluggish thinking, brain fog, which is just, basically not feeling like you have the mental capacity to do things very well. It's kind of hard to work. Infertility, which is becoming a bigger problem all the time. And these are some very, very common symptoms. And anyone that has a bunch of these, they just don't feel too good and they don't look too good. And they want a solution, and they have not been finding them very often.
Yeah, because I these are so broad that you go to your doctor and you
they're
say
common
these
symptoms,
things,
and other things can cause these problems. But thyroid is always one. If your thyroid is a contributing factor, you want to make sure you're addressing it. That's all.
Okay.
Other
wow.
things can cause
wow.
all those problems. The silk and thyroid, especially if you have like four or five of them.
Wow, okay. So why are so many women in particular experiencing issues with their thyroids these days?
Well, it's a pretty simple answer. Overexposure to hormone disruptors. That's the big
okay.
answer.
Okay, so what is a hormone disruptor then?
It's really anything that interferes with normal function of glands and hormones. And these days, we live in a world that is just bombarding us with hormone disruptors. I mean, we are just bombarded by substances that interfere with normal hormone and gland function.
All right. So this probably ties into nutrition. It probably ties into environmental there's probably so many things, but what are the 10 most common hormone disruptors that we can control in our environment?
Well, okay, there's estrogen is injected into cows and pigs and chickens, so they grow faster and bigger, and that gets into our meat, our pork, our milk, our chicken, and our eggs. So we're eating estrogen all the time, and I'll tell you what, that's why it's one of the biggest problems with hormone imbalances. I mean, you can't take estrogen without having some effects, especially unintended estrogen. Also, the same animals are given growth hormones, which also affect us. So those are two things that we just should not be getting subjected to. Pesticide acts like a hormone when it gets in our bodies. And, of course, pesticide is sprayed on vegetables and fruits and all kinds of things. It's in the soil. Herbicide, which is a form of pesticide, is also sprayed on fruits and vegetables. Genetically modified foods, especially corn, wheat, and soy, are definitely hormone disruptors. Plastic, which produces a substance known as parabens, acts like a hormone, and it's a hormone disruptor. And look at all the plastic we use and all the cooking we do in plastic and the microwaving in plastic and the hot drinks that are in plastic. I mean, we're getting so much plastic exposure, hot water bottles of people with their water bottles in their car. Then there's
yeah.
things like chemicals like, polychlorinated biphenyls known as PCBs that were dumped into the rivers and the oceans after they were used by manufacturers. And they are just, these chemicals just don't break down. They're just indestructible. And they're getting into our food supply and we'll wind up, they're hormone disruptors. Things like BHA and BHT, these are chemicals that are used as bleachers and preservatives, are commonly used in the food, hormone disruptors. Mercury and cadmium are present in seafood, are more hormone disruptors. And there's so many chemicals in makeup, in skincare, and hair care products. And in Europe, there's at least, let me put it this way, there's about over 1,000 substances we use in America that are banned in Europe. In makeup and skincare
wow.
and hair care, that, I mean, there's just no regulation here at all. And in Europe, these things, they will not let these manufacturers make them. And these are, some of these are even carcinogenic. They're more than hormone disruptors. And, you know, you look at these, what's in your makeup, you won't believe these long chemical names. And, you know, so you don't realize, you know, it all adds up.
It does. I mean, that's why.
Laundry detergent, dishwasher detergent, you know, dry cleaning. I mean, we're just bombarded with chemicals.
Wow. So that's quite the list, and I completely agree with the chemicals and makeup. I went to natural mineral base that is as basic as you can get for the little bit of makeup that I wear.
Better.
Just because I went, wow, I'm putting this stuff around my eyes, you know. So are there any other significant hormone disruptors? I know that's a huge list, but there's got to be some other ones that are pretty major.
Two very, very big ones that are very commonly used are birth control pills. I mean, those are hormones, and I know why people take them, partly for birth control, and many women are taking them because they have painful, irregular menstrual cycles. And so whichever their reason, they are hormone disruptors, and they definitely cause some havoc. Also antibiotics. Antibiotics cause a lot of disruption. And remember I told you earlier that the large intestine is partly where the T4, T3 conversion is? Well, antibiotics really disrupt that function, among other things. And antibiotics, by the way, are not just taken by prescription. They're also given to animals, which then winds up on our food supply, our milk, our eggs, our cheese, chicken, beef, pork. So we're getting a lot of antibiotics and a lot of hormones in our food, whether you like it or not, and it's definitely taking its toll. And we're going to become resistant to antibiotics in the near future, and we're not going to be able to even use the ones we've got for the purpose of which they're intended, which is to, you know, kill bacterial infections. But they do cause problems.
Yeah.
They're common hormone disruptors. I get a lot of people that come to see me for autoimmunity, and many of them are women, and they, a high percentage of them have a background of antibiotics and birth control pills. It's very common. And they start out young in life, by the way. Young girls, 12, 13, and 14, are taking birth control pills and antibiotics for their skin. I mean, this is common, very, very common, and it's taking its toll.
So are there any other major factors causing hypothyroidism beyond, you know, these common things that we eat and that we place on our bodies?
Well, there's another big one which you don't hear a lot about. We're in the midst of a new round of iodine deficiency. Now, people think that's over with, but at least in America, because we have iodine in our food, but we have a lot overexposure to chemicals that are called halides, bromine, chlorine, and fluorine, and they're used extensively in all kinds of, they have all kinds of uses. I mean, I won't go into all the things, but they're very widespread, and the exposure intake of chlorine, bromine, and fluorine displaces iodine in our bodies. And so when you don't have enough iodine, it affects your thyroid gland, and it's one of the reasons why cysts and fibroids are so common in women's breasts, uterus, and ovaries. Low iodine is displaced by bromine, chlorine, and fluorine, and also for men with their prostates. So this is becoming a growing problem.
Wow, that's interesting. So just a little bit off topic, if we increased our iodine, would that help cysts and fibroids and inflammation in our system, or do we also have to get rid of our exposure to bromine, chlorine, and fluorine?
Well, when I see people for that purpose, I do both.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard, by the way, to do it. You just have to have a little idea of how to do it. But, for instance, I just tell people when they start taking very low doses of the proper iodine, and I mean the proper because there's always, you know, something called the proper and not the proper, but I have them take some sea salt and some magnesium and some selenium to leach out the bromine and the chlorine as they're adding the iodine. But, I mean, yes, you need to do both, actually. Not dramatically, just start to take more iodine, start to leach out your bromine, and also avoid it. I mean, so, you know, you want to avoid chlorine by having filtered water, and you want to avoid fluoridated, you know, dental care products and don't be overexposed to bromine in different ways. I mean, there's things you can do to avoid the intake also. It just takes, like everything else, being a conscious and aware, and then beginning to manage this a little bit more than you had in the past, because you're now aware that there's something called iodine deficiency.
And I thought that was over in, what, the 30s or 40s when
everybody thinks that.
They introduced iodine to
Dr. Brownstein, who's an expert on iodine and thyroid. He's a very nationally known. He's written like about 15 books, and this is his specialty. And he tests. And he says 95% of the people he does lab work for are low in iodine and or high in bromine or chlorine or fluorine. He says it's just, you can take it for granted. Just some people more than others. But I've had quite a few women who started taking iodine, and their lumpy breast cleared up, and their cysts stopped coming, and fibroids and this polycystic ovary syndrome, which is becoming rampant. So, yeah, it's a factor. It's not the only one, but it's one of them. There's a reason all these problems occur, all these hormonal imbalances.
Interesting. So, you know, we've talked about some of the major causes of hypothyroidism, but is there, you know, besides just calling it hypothyroidism, is there a disease or some, you know, some syndrome that we can take and look up?
Well, one of the hypothyroidism isn't really a disease. Okay, it's an imbalance. Okay, it's just like low estrogen is not a disease, or menopause is not a disease. Okay, all there are is significant or not significant hormone imbalances, but they do produce symptoms. And of course, anytime someone has a symptom, they think of a disease. But you know, not everything is a disease. Okay, diseases are kind of, well, I think of diseases, you know, viral, bacterial, fungal, you know, things like that, okay? However, there is a condition that is very common, and it's called an autoimmune disease. Now, this has the word disease in it. And autoimmunity for the thyroid is either Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. Hashimoto's is the hypothyroid autoimmune, and Graves' is the hyperthyroid autoimmune. But when it comes to hypothyroidism, the highest percentage of women with hypothyroidism are due to Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune condition, which means the immune system is attacking the thyroid gland. And there's more women have that as the cause of the hypothyroidism than any other cause you can think of. So it's very common. And it's named after Dr. Hashimoto. That's where the name came from. And
So what causes it to be so common, Shep?
Well, all the hormone disruptors, part of it, especially women that are prone to it and take birth control pills and antibiotics and have weakened their immune systems. And usually there's a precipitating factor like a car accident or a bout of a strong viral problem, you know, just mononucleosis, you know, getting hepatitis. I mean, just something strong and serious that really imbalances the immune system, and then it just triggers Hashimoto's. But for a lot of women, just starting birth control pills is enough.
Interesting.
And it depends on how many other health problems they have.
Yeah, so the difference between hypothyroidism and having autoimmune disease is the fact that the autoimmune disease, our body is attacking the thyroid by itself.
Yes.
And hypothyroidism is it's just a reduced level of T4 in our system.
It's just anything that causes low thyroid function. And there's so many things, you know, there's, without getting into the details, I mean, there's so many mechanisms that are involved in the management of your thyroid. You know, your brain has two glands, the hypothalamus and the pituitary that produce hormones that regulate the thyroid. The thyroid produces hormones that then go to the liver. The liver has to convert. The large intestine has to convert. Things happen at the cell. I mean, there's many, many places where there's issues. But all those are just one imbalance or another. Just below iodine. But Hashimoto's is another story. That's an immune system issue. And that, by the way, is a cause of hypothyroidism. And it can lead to other problems. You can even lose your thyroid gland or get thyroid cancer if it gets bad enough. But that's a dysregulated immune system. And that has to be tested for and identified. It's different. You can't tell from the symptoms.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, if you have the symptoms, you're like, well, I have the symptoms. What's wrong? You know, but the symptoms are still the same symptoms. It's, one cause is an immune system problem. The other ones are just hormone imbalances for different reasons.
So, you know, I know a lot of women, and I have friends who've done this, who go to the doctor. They get a blood test, and then they're told that their levels are normal in spite of all these abnormal symptoms. And how can we explain this, and how can we also be more of an advocate for ourselves in that case?
Well, it's probably the clearest indication of how many holes there are in just using Western medicine, especially the way it's practiced in America. I mean, I've practiced Western medicine along with Chinese medicine, herbalism, homeopathy. You know, I mean, I integrate for that reason. But Western doctors, of course, just use what they use. Plus, their practices, their diagnostic procedures are all governed by insurance reimbursement. And insurance companies severely limit the extent of the testing that doctors do. So, number one, when you go to a doctor, you're going to get a very limited test. I mean, you'll get maybe one or two things checked rather than 10 or 12. So all those other things that are not checked, of course, are not even looked at. And then, even when they do the things they do, the normal ranges are so far apart that you have to have significant pathology before they do anything about it. So if you have some symptoms, but they're not pathological, let's say, well, you're fine. So you have to wait until you get so sick that you need hormone replacement therapy before they do anything. And that's after they only measured two or three things to begin with. They don't talk about underconversion of T4 to T3. They don't do anything about iodine deficiency. They usually don't test for Hashimoto's or Graves. And they wait till the things they do test are so significant that any chance you had of an alternative is almost gone because this, you know, you have such a severe condition. And then after that, all they ever do anyway is give you synthetic hormones, which still only address part of the problem anyway. So, it just shows or reflects the limitations of Western medicine, you know. And this is like a metaphor for it, because Western medicine has a lot of good things, but it's incomplete. So is everything, actually. I mean, nothing's complete in itself.
Right,
and that's just
right.
Another one. I mean, homeopathy is not, you know, you would not go to a homeopathic practitioner if you broke your bones. You know, I mean, there's every form of healing and healthcare has its roles. But we're just used to going to doctors for everything, and they just simply don't do everything and provide everything.
Yeah, and I think it's impossible for one system, and that's why we respect what you do, because you combine the best of Western, Chinese, and homeopathic and everything else together. So, you know, to give us great answers. So.
Actually, in 50 years, 50 or 60 years from now, I don't know how long it's going to take, no one will just practice Western medicine anymore by itself. It'll be looked at like, how did we do that? You know, it's going to take a big change because, you know, we're talking about the insurance reimbursement system and the healthcare system. I mean, but whatever is stopping it, when the day comes when integrative work is practiced, that's when healthcare will be decent. Everything is available, everything's out there, but you know, who will you go to provide that? I mean, it's very hard right now. And so when you go to healthcare people, whether they're people like me or doctors or anybody, you know, you can go to an acupuncturist and they won't know that. They'll miss things also. Everybody misses something. So we don't have a lot of ways to get a total healthcare picture and a very comprehensive look and, you know, and an avoidance of late-stage treatments and diagnosis. And early stage is what you want before it gets
bad. Absolutely.
And that is what I do. I mean, that's my specialty, but it's not out there in a very big way. It's becoming more common. But we're a long, long way.
So how can we avoid taking the synthetic thyroid hormones and having our systems so far gone that, you know, we're in those really bad late stages where we've already damaged the natural thyroid function?
What happens,
we do to improve?
You know, if a woman is just fed up with being told she's fine, when she goes to her doctor and says, no, I'm not fine, I'm depressed and I'm cold and I'm overweight and losing my hair or whatever it is, you know, and they want somebody to respond. They eventually, if they persist, find someone like me who knows how to do testing and get them on a different path. And they have to change their diets, you know, they have to identify the stressors and get their hormones balanced and, you know, clean up their life and get some balance in their life. And it's really going to take getting on the road to health and identifying all the stressors in their life and one by one reducing them or eliminating them. So it takes good comprehensive blood work. It takes getting maybe bioidentical hormones instead of synthetic. It may take supplements and homeopathic remedies instead of any hormones. It's usually going to take identifying allergies, eliminating persistent chronic viruses and bacterial infections, losing some weight, getting some exercise, learning how to eat. You know, there's just, you got to get on the road to health. And it's not always easy to find that, but that's still what it takes, and that's what can be done. That's what I do with my patients. I mean, I just,
right.
I have the background to do it. But
yeah.
Everybody has someone like me to see, or I'm not a national figure. I don't write books. I mean, I'm just me in my little clinic. But people can do that, and when they do, not only does their thyroid function improve, their whole life does. You know, their general health, and they avoid some of these really bad things.
All right. So we talked
We have it all here in America, you know?
Yeah.
All the contamination and all the toxins and all the hormone disruptors, plus all the good stuff, all the good food and all the books and all the, you know, I mean, it's all here. You just got to be able to find it.
Yeah.
We're
so
looking for insurance companies to pay for it. Excuse me?
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, so if we improve our diet, we improve our environment, we improve, our health overall. Are there other things that we can do? Are there supplements? Are there other remedies?
I mean, you have to get
long-term?
Whatever supplements or homeopathic remedies that will be appropriate for you at the time. That's just to get well. And then to stay well, you have to know what you need to take to stay well. Because, for example, it's very hard to get enough omega-3s in your diet. So fish oil is a common thing people take. No matter how, you know, the stay well, it's just a management supplement. But you have to know all supplements have a little story to them. And they're not all good. And they're all good for you. And they're all the right time. I mean, I have people that walk in and they're on 20 to 30 supplements now and they're sick. I'm thinking, well, whatever you're doing, this isn't working very well. And I know they went on the internet and they saw 16 people by now and, you know, they're not well and they're taking all the stuff. So, yes, supplements are important. Can be very helpful if you get the right ones for the right purpose at the right time. And that is going to require some professional guidance. But, those are some of the things that, for the thyroid in particular, there's some really good stuff out there that I use. And I get a lot of good results with it. But sometimes people do need hormones. You know, I never know.
Okay. So
we try the supplements first, and if not, then they get certain hormones they need. I try and get them through a bioidentical practitioner. Although some people don't do well in bioidenticals, by the way. Not everybody does well with them. Some people need some for different reasons. But I think bioidenticals are better.
Okay. So if is near Vienna, Virginia, and do a clinic and do a session with you, that's great. Because, you know, we always say, wonderful, we approve Shep. But if they weren't in your area and they had to go find a doctor who would do comprehensive labs and would actually, you know, look outside of Western medicine, what are some of the things they could ask to make sure that they're going to get the service
always,
the sort of customization?
If someone says they practice functional medicine, just for starters, that's a good not everybody does. Whether it's a medical doctor or a non-medical doctor, functional medicine isn't a form of Western medicine. It's an integrative approach. So you have to network. You have to talk to people. You have to go on websites where women are already doing things and see what they're doing and do some reading, get some books written by people that know what they're talking about. I constantly refer people to books to read to get educated. But, you know, if someone says, well, gee, I live in Kansas, you know, what can I do? I might be able to find a practitioner there or refer them to someone close by. You know, you don't have to see people once a week for your life. I mean, you need some initial guidance. And then, you know, you don't have to put so much time and energy into it. But it's just bioidenticals. There's a growing number of doctors that will prescribe them. You can just put in bioidentical hormones and see who prescribes them or who offers them. I mean, this, you know, with the Internet these days, it isn't all that hard to find people that will do this. And
okay,
you got to
so
find a few people that, you know, a little small team. I can't prescribe hormones. So I do what I can, and if they need hormones, I try and get them to get the best ones from their doctors, and I can get them labs, things like that. But, you know, these days it's out there. There's a lot of information out there.
So the best way would be put in hypothyroidism or bioidentical hormones and find out who practices or who has...
That's a good way. You know, you'll find some people that way. You can... anything you want to put in there, see what you get. You can say functional medicine, you know, and thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
Acupuncture and
yep.
thyroid. Homeopathy and thyroid. You just Google. I mean, it isn't that hard. And you'll start finding people.
Yep.
And maybe the people you find will say, well, you know, you can't help but, you know, someone that can. At least they'll be talking to someone that's in that world.
Okay. So, great advice. And can a woman improve a condition like Hashimoto or Graves' disease or even just hypothyroidism?
Absolutely. I have quite a few women that have gotten their antibody levels, which is how it's measured, way down, some down to normal, way down from where they were, major improvements in their symptoms, and learn how to live in such a way that they avoid having those problems in the future. Because you do have to do that. I mean, you can't just live willy-nilly. Same thing with any autoimmune condition, by the way. Hashimoto's, Graves, multiple sclerosis, lupus, psoriasis, they all require a similar path. Finding what the stresses are, how to live a clean, balanced life, and how to keep your health. And you do have to work on it. It's a management job.
Yeah.
You have to manage your health. And you can.
So,
and you do anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, those people, more so. Because if they don't, the consequences are, you know, more egregious and earlier. But all of us, you know, as we age, if we don't take better care of ourselves, they're not going to age very well. If you don't pay attention to your food and your lifestyle and the balance and, you know, your stressors, then you're going to get gobbled up. You're going to age badly and quickly, and it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be tough for you later. And
so
money cannot buy health. There's an old saying, no one can do your push-ups for you. Do you hear what I said? No one can do your push-ups for you. You know, you have to do your work. And you got to find out. And you don't have to be a saint. You don't have to live in a bubble. You just have to become more conscious and find people that will be honest with you, that have skills and experience, that have a wider range than maybe their usual people, and learn from them. Get educated and take it on.
I had a question for you. So you mentioned infertility as an aspect of hypothyroidism. I know infertility can come from a lot of different sources, but how does the thyroid affect a woman who wants to get pregnant?
Well, thyroid has a huge impact. The when you start getting into the details, there's a huge communication between the brain's hormones, the pituitary, and the ovarian hormones. And every month, there is a hormone produced by the pituitary called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. And what it does is it stimulates the follicle, which is in the ovary, and that's where the egg is. And that has to happen appropriately. And if you're low in thyroid, that does not happen appropriately. And that's the beginning of an egg maturing and developing and finally ovulation occurring and the egg going into the uterus to be fertilized. That process requires adequate thyroxin T3. If it's low, that alone can account for inability to get pregnant. So, I mean, it's hard. Plus, it also, there's more to it, because getting pregnant and the fetus implanting in the uterine lining and not losing the child, and the child being a healthy kid and having a healthy pregnancy, and the mother being healthy throughout the pregnancy, and then postpartum after delivery, all these things all are much, much better when the woman to begin with has a healthy thyroid. So it's a very important thing to look at and find out about. To get pregnant, to stay pregnant, have a healthy kid, healthy delivery, you know, healthy pregnancy, all of that. And I think one of the reasons why so many kids these days are born with issues is because their moms weren't healthy to begin with. They just didn't know it. You know, and they're bringing very fragile kids into the world who can't tolerate the vaccinations and the dairy and gluten that they're fed early in life and all the other stuff that they're not strong enough. And their moms weren't healthy enough to begin with. But they didn't know. You know, so they just did the best they could. But I'm telling you out loud that all this can be worked on. My daughter wants to get pregnant right now, and I'm working with her right now to get her health in peak.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on it, so she's, you know, going to have a healthy baby and then get pregnant and have a healthy kid.
Yeah.
So
these
things are important.
Sure,
the thyroid's a pivotal function.
Okay. And so is that the reason that women have...
something.
Yeah.
Since we're on the subject, when women are having a problem getting pregnant, they're trying.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they're having what they call fertility issues.
Yes.
30% of the time, it's the men that have the problem. That isn't well known.
Huh. 30%. So 70% of it is female.
30% of the time when a woman's not getting pregnant that thinks she should be able to get pregnant, and she thinks it's her, it's not her. It's the man. She's completely capable, and her you know, male partner is not. Just thought I'd throw that in. It's not well known. Because men are being affected just like women by all the same things. And their ability to, you know, produce a healthy baby is also compromised, just as the woman does.
Yeah. So I assume that, you know, the reproductive system then has a lot of effect on the endocrine system, which is all based on hormones, right?
Yep, you bet.
And that's why we have more hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism than men?
Women have much more complex endocrine systems than men, which is why they have so many more thyroid problems. They just, I mean, a woman's hormone levels are really changing every day when, you know, premenopausal. Literally, every day you're in a different place with estrogen and progesterone.
Wow.
And others. I mean, so we are always changing. And there's no day when they're the same. Constant change. Menstrual cycle is just nothing but change.
Wow.
All month long. And then don't go through that. And so there's a lot more regulation required, and there's a lot more opportunities for dysregulation.
So do you have more information for the listeners so they can follow up with what they've learned or to contact?
Well, my website actually has three pretty decent videos on the thyroid. And if they want to watch them, I'll learn a lot. That's why I made them, because I can't do this all the time, this talk. You know, if you want to announce my website, they can go on my website and just read, you know, they can watch the videos and learn a lot. And if they still want more information, they can send me an email and I'll respond.
Okay, so what's your website address, Shep?
www.vcmedicine.com. And VC is short for Vienna Complementary Medicine. So it's www.vcmedicine.com.
And, you know, what's the best way for someone to contact you?
Email.
Okay. What's your email?
Which is on my website.
Okay, beautiful. So go to vcmedicine.com to watch three videos.
www.vcmedicine.com. Vienna Complementary Medicine.com.
Excellent. And what can you say to empower our listeners?
I would say the following to anybody about their health. It's your responsibility. Become your own advocate. just realize that doctors and people like me are nothing but glorified consultants. We're not in charge. You are. It's your responsibility and your opportunity to learn how to take care of yourself and to do it. And in today's world, there's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of opportunity to be well. There's also a lot of contamination and a lot of problems. So it's just really as clear as it could ever be, you know, to learn how to take care of yourself and then develop good, healthy health habits. And anyone that does that will do pretty well.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I want to say thank you so much, Shep, for coming and presenting this important information. And thank you for everyone who stayed and listened. And, you know, this is a fantastic topic, just like all of our other health topics. I know we have some other ones scheduled later this year. So thank you very much. This is Ashley Ross with the Coaching Chicks. And you can contact me, and you can contact Shep through his website, and I will have all of this recorded and posted. So thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
Ladies and gentlemen, push the safety bars up and exit the ride.